Please be seated. I'd like first of all to say thank you to Vaughan for inviting me to participate in what has been an extraordinary series of Lent addresses. In a way, Vaughan is showing his own sense of faith in education by allowing me, a second year curate and a still only in my first year school chaplain, to contribute to what has been an extraordinary lineup of speakers who have offered us engaging observations gleaned from their nearly 90 years of combined professional experience. I have been inspired, provoked, and encouraged by their words, and I have learned much. Leading the charge, Bishop Christopher gave us an immensely helpful three-pronged framework whereby to approach the concept of faith and education, outlining the partnership of home, church, and school. To this framework, Richard Nicholson and Andy Perry added a fourth important dimension, that of community. Our MP, Matt Weston, took a larger view of community, including the public sphere, and shared a hopeful vision of faithful communities of respect and tolerance. Each speaker offered their own personal account of faith in education, with fascinating insights from their own home, school, church, and community lives, and how these experiences have shaped and informed who they are and how they live and serve today. With Mandy Roberts illustrating what I believe to be one of the best examples I've heard of faith at work in every sense of that phrase. So my own words this evening are shaped by the form that has gone before in three parts: my experience, my school, and my vision, which I hope will add to what has been a thoroughly engaging conversation. Part 1, Psalms at sunrise, prayers in the moonlight. Looking back on my own life, and in particular my spiritual development, a number of key moments surfaced, conveniently anchoring themselves by two nicely bookended experiences, Psalms at sunrise and prayers in the moonlight. But first, a bit of Shakespeare. As many of you know, prior to being ordained as a priest in the Church of England, my former life was that of a university lecturer and Shakespeare scholar. All of that began with an immediate and organic engagement with Shakespeare at the age of 6. My father had an extensive rare record collection, and one of his holy of holies was a box set of LPs called The Living Shakespeare. Rather naughtily, I grabbed one of these LPs and played it. I was instantly transfixed by the magical sound of Shakespeare's poetry. I never looked back. Although I must say I actually hated Shakespeare in secondary school, the teaching was so deadly. But I kept it alive on my own and felt compelled to ensure that others would find the life in it as well. That narrative is not unlike that of my spiritual education, with the common thread being the sense of being guided by an individual and organic engagement. I grew up in the heartland of the American South, and somewhat surprisingly, my faith life was an extraordinary combination of the best of both worlds, Catholic and Protestant. My mother's background was largely Anglo-Catholic-leaning Episcopalian, whilst my father was dyed-in-the-wool Southern Baptist, Protestant. Their compromise was a hybrid existence whereby we kids attended Catholic school during the week and Baptist church at the weekends. My parents' Baptist church was itself an anomaly within its own context, as it was rather somber and not overly happy-clappy. My mother was the director of music, and there wasn't a Charles Wesley hymn in existence that she didn't love from start to finish. My dad, a teetotal High Court judge, was superintendent of the Sunday school, which was managed with military precision, like real school, with homework, even during the summer holidays. The Bible, or the Word, was central to everything there. Beyond my parents, the pastor of my childhood, the Reverend Samuel S. Taylor, was my first significant spiritual influence. Reverend Taylor was truly a gentleman and a scholar. He was fluent in Hebrew, Greek, Latin, and Aramaic, and often cited all four when he interpreted scriptures in his sermons. Sermons that routinely went on for at least 45 minutes each and every Sunday. And we children were expected to sit up, sit still, and take it all in. Baptism by full immersion was a free will choice which I made at the age of 9 during summer vacation Bible school. Alongside all of this, the opportunity of experiencing Catholic liturgy and spirituality during the week at school was one of my earliest joys. It was as if someone had opened a window, allowing in a fresh summer's breeze. Stillness, silence, ritual. There I fell in love with the Eucharist. And of course, rules being rules, us Protestant kids weren't allowed to receive communion, but had to sit there week after week after week and watch. I'm sure it was not the intention, but for me, being excluded from the Eucharist had the palpable effect of making me desire it above everything else. And in an odd way, perhaps the person I am today is largely due to that early experience. Certainly in terms of spirituality. Psalms at Sunrise refers to a spiritual practice I developed on my own as a child, perhaps after experiencing the Psalms being chanted or sung at school. My bedroom window faced east, and I sat early each morning in my window praying and meditating with the Psalms. My family found it endearing but had no idea where it came from, a bit like my love of Shakespeare. With this foundation, it is probably no surprise that my greatest act of teenage rebellion was to be re-baptized and confirmed as a Catholic at 16, much to the horror and dismay of my proudly Protestant father. It shouldn't have really come as a surprise to him, given the fact that I'd attended Catholic school since the age of 5 and was by then a pupil at a Catholic secondary school for girls. It was, in fact, at Mount St. Mary Academy that I first heard the call to vocation. Interesting dinner conversation when I came home from school and announced that I was going to become a nun. Without even looking up from his dinner plate, my father said, "No, you are not." Later, with a bit more patience, he asked me to wait, to go to university first and then decide. If my calling was real, he said, it would wait. So off I went then to Holy Cross College, a wonderful Catholic university in leafy New England, run by Jesuits. And so another window opened. At Holy Cross, I encountered two outstanding figures in my spiritual hall of fame, Sister Honora and Father Lebrun. Sister Honora was one of our university chaplains. She and I had many conversations about vocation. I went to see her after having had a vivid and deeply moving dream in which I saw myself celebrating the Eucharist. That dream was as clear and real to me as looking in a mirror. Sister Honora had faith in my dream and encouraged me to pursue it, despite the fact that pursuing ordination for me would mean walking away from the Catholic Church altogether. A church that was very close to Sister Honora's heart, to which she had devoted her life. Father Joe Lebrun, a joyous Irish Jesuit, was a campus legend who led the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. Under his spiritual direction, I did a 5-day retreat in complete silence on the shores of the Atlantic Ocean. It was the week before graduating from uni. marking the ending and the beginning. I recall sitting high on the rocks above the sea, praying in the moonlight. Part 2, The Warwick Way. I am new to Warwick School, and I'm sure that there are people here this evening who have far greater knowledge of the place than I do. I am honored to be a part of Warwick School and was drawn to Warwick School by its purpose, aims, and mission, which are, quote, to inspire and nurture every pupil morally, spiritually, intellectually, physically, and socially, to build on their individual strengths and help them to grow into well-rounded young men, confident but not arrogant, who can play a positive role in the world. The key values Warwick School aims to foster in its pupils are curiosity, creativity, courage, perseverance, responsibility, and humility. These values are needed now more than ever, I believe, in a world that seems increasingly to be morally, ethically, civically, and spiritually bankrupt. Arrogance and vainglory are the orders of our day, where the politics of nations has been reduced to glib witticisms in 140 characters or less, where discourse has been displaced by diatribe, dialogue by demonization, and democracy lost in a maze of political posturing. In this day and age, I believe our young people crave, sincerely yearn for, authenticity, integrity, and grace. Well, really, I suppose we all do. Faith in education provides positive alternatives and ways of being today. Spiritual growth and development are vital. We are thankfully, as a society, more generally aware of the importance of mental health and emotional well-being. Again, faith in education has a significant role to play, as cutting-edge scientific research has revealed. Recent studies have shown that children who have a positive, active relationship to spirituality are 40% less likely to use and abuse alcohol or other substances, 60% less likely to be depressed as teenagers, and 80% less likely to engage in dangerous or unprotected sexual activity. At the forefront of this research is clinical psychologist Lisa Miller. She is the author of the book, The Spiritual Child. Dr. Miller and her colleagues argue in the book, The Spiritual Child, quite persuasively that children who are in touch with their natural, innate spirituality, that is, an essential personal relationship to a higher power that is loving and guiding, whether that is God, nature, spirit, or the universe, are more likely than their counterparts to have positive markers for thriving in life generally, as well as high levels of academic success. Part 3, Goals and Guidance. As chaplain to Warwick School, I see my role as a ministry of presence, of being present. My vision and hopes there are, 1, to make God and God's outrageous love for each of us known to all. 2, to get out of the way and to allow God's Spirit space within which to do God's work in Warwick School and in our pupils' lives. To enable children to connect and reconnect with their innate spirituality and to build spiritual lives for themselves. To set pupils, staff, parents, and the school community off on a journey, a lifelong journey of faith, a journey of highs and lows, calm seas and stormy weather, a journey of dreams, hopes, and doubts, Faith is a journey, not a destination. To create a culture of love, following the example of Christ at Warwick School and beyond. And finally, to offer sanctuary, safe space, refuge, haven to all who enter in. In this, I've been guided by two key things. First, the words of Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me. He has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And lastly, a principle that my husband Mark called the equation of one. The unflinching belief that as I stand in chapel each day, that there is at least one boy who needs desperately to hear the words God wishes to speak that day. Thank you.